Against this bill.
The Judiciary Committee will come to order. Senator Moy, you've informed us that you'd like to go with Senate File 1097.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to present to the committee Senate File 1097. The Senate File 1097 is a certificate of good conduct. I'd like to acknowledge that Senator Julie Rosen is a co-author in this bill, and she supports in concept what we're trying to go for in this bill. I don't think it's all there are things in there that we've worked very hard to try to change. And I also want to put on the record that Senator Higgins actually has carried this bill in the past. As we were drafting Senate File 1097, we also solicited input from the executive branch. We substantially modified the bill before we introduced it in its current form. And I don't know if anybody from the governor's office is going to be coming to testify on the bill, but we did try to work with Mr. Harry Kennedy on putting the bill into a shape in preparation for introduction, because this bill was introduced last year, and the reason for it coming to being was a recommendation of the Collateral Sanctions Work Group. So we brought the bill back, making some substantial changes to it. And members, I'd like to pass out some information for you to look at. Mr. Chair and members, was very interested in doing this Certificate of Good Conduct bill because in addition to it being one of the recommendations of the Collateral Sanctions Work Group, a couple of years ago, Senators Scheid and Rest and I, as part of our Judiciary Committee's trip to the northern borders, had an opportunity to engage with our northern border communities, as well as with the provincial Canadian government, about border crossing issues. And as you may all be aware, right now with the enhanced border securities, we have some issues with Minnesotans going back and forth between the U.S. and the Canada, into Canada. And so in those conversations, it was interesting to hear from the Canadian government that because of the background information that's being shared between our two countries, increasingly many Minnesotans who have committed a crime in Minnesota are being barred from going into Canada. And as one way to try to address that, the Canadian government created a character rehabilitation program where Minnesotans, or for that matter, I guess any citizens of border states may petition to the Canadian government to rehabilitate their good character. And so I'm passing out to all of you to look at the application that Minnesotans now, who may be found to be inadmissible to Canada on the basis of certain criminal convictions, could actually make an application to the Canadian government by applying through the application that I'm passing around. There are multiple pages, so I didn't make copies. But if you take a look at that, I've highlighted some provisions which I found to be eerily familiar. Senate File 1097 in no way was drafted with that, with the Canadian model in mind. In fact, Senate File 1097 was drafted, and then I was able to get the information. I just passed it out for your information that, as a matter of happenstance, they actually take into consideration for their rehabilitation process many of the same elements that we have contained in Senate File 1097. And that, in fact, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Canadian government, obviously, but I think that it would be interesting to see if we were able to establish a certificate of good conduct that if you look at the evidence that's required in the application to the Canadian government, but that perhaps a Minnesota certificate of good conduct might be offered as part of the package of documents that could be offered in that application to the Canadian government to rehabilitate the records of Minnesotans. Again, I have not talked to the Canadian government. What we do here in Minnesota in no way binds them. But it's interesting to look at the application that they do provide for people who are applying to offer information or documentations on the part of their about their character within the state of Minnesota as part of that application process. I just found that to be interesting. So given that, I would like to walk through a little bit some of the sections of the Certificate of Good Conduct Bill. Section 1 of the bill stipulates or defines who is eligible for applying for a certificate of good conduct. A person has been convicted of a crime or crimes which directly relate to public employment. Related to the public employment sought or to the occupation for which a license is sought will not be disqualified from the employment or occupation if the person can show competent evidence of sufficient rehabilitation and present fitness to perform the duties of the public employment sought or the occupation for which the license is sought. And then we list, starting at line 1.15, what would constitute sufficient evidence of rehabilitation for purposes as established by the Certificate of Good Conduct. The Certificate of Good Conduct is one of the list of evidences in addition to those listed in this section. In Section 2 of the bill, well, why don't I come back and talk about Section 2 of the bill? I'd like to go to Section 3 of the bill that describes the process for obtaining the Certificate of Good Conduct. Subdivision 2 states that a person who has been convicted or adjudicated delinquent by a Minnesota State Court District for a crime committed in this state may petition a court for a certificate of good conduct. And a petitioner may seek a certificate for a single crime or multiple crimes. It also said that when filing the petition, the petitioner have to pay a filing fee. In subsection B there, though, we specifically provide that, or the bill specifically provide that a person is not eligible for a certificate of good conduct and may not file a petition under this section if the person has already filed a petition or an expungement in the past 2 years. Subdivision 3 spells out the very complex requirements that an individual would have to follow in order to petition for a certificate of good conduct. So, for example, in that sub A, parent 1, they would have to state their name, the names under which the petitioner was convicted or adjudicated, and all other aliases or names of which by which the petitioner has been known, the individual's birthday, all addresses, a statement of reason why the person is seeking a certificate, the date and terms of sentences or dispositions, and the name of offenses for which the sentences were imposed, including detailed description of the crime for which the certificate is being sought, the names of the judges and prosecuting attorneys, the names of any individuals or businesses who are victims. Sub 6, asks the petitioner to talk about what steps the petitioner has taken since the time of the offense toward personal rehabilitation, including treatment, work, and other personal history. 7 asks the petitioners for their criminal conviction record to indicate all convictions or delinquent adjudications of, and then list of the listing of any crimes. It also asks for all comparable convictions or adjudications in any other state, federal court, or foreign country whether the convictions or adjudications occurred before or after the conviction or adjudication for which the certificate is sought. In 8, we asked for the petitioner's criminal charges record that it indicate all prior and pending criminal charges against the petitioner. Again, whether it is in Minnesota or any other jurisdiction, including all criminal charges have been continued for dismissal or stayed for adjudication or have been the subject of pretrial diversion. And the list of very, very specific requirements continues. The bill also specifically asked the petitioner to include with the petition an executed criminal history consent form, including fingerprints, to the BCA for a criminal background check. This specific provision actually was put into the bill among a number of other provisions as part of the feedback that we received from Mr. Harry Kennedy in the governor's office. Subdivision 4 requires the petitioner to serve the petition for a certificate and the proposed certificate order on the prosecutorial office with jurisdiction over the conviction or adjudication for which the certificate is sought. And then we ask that the prosecutorial office make a reasonable and good faith effort to notify any victims of the offense for which the certificate is sought. The bill also asks that in this notice, the prosecutorial office must specifically inform the victims of the victim's right to be present and to submit an oral or written statement at the hearing. Sub 5 describes the hearing process, and then sub 6 defines really what the eligibility is, that the individual must meet the following conditions. In addition to the application, they have to also meet these eligibility conditions. Let's see what else. And you can see the list of conditions are very, very extensive. Subdivision 7 then talks about the court issuing the certificate of good conduct. If the petitioner, and this is what's important, is that if the petitioner has established by a preponderance of the evidence that the petitioner meets the eligibility requirements as specified. And then if the court grants a certificate of good conduct, the court will notify the BCA of the court's ruling, and the Bureau will record the certificate on the petitioner's criminal record. Sub 9 speaks to the effect of the certificate. The effect is that there will be a presumption of rehabilitation in favor of the person to whom it was issued, and it will relieve the person of any state-imposed collateral sanctions relating to eligibility for housing, employment, or professional or occupational licensing arising from a crime for which the certificate was issued. Sub B talks about speaks to the effect that a certificate of good conduct has no effect on the collateral sanctions that are unrelated to housing, employment, or licensing. Sub 10 down below provides for a revocation process. So a certificate is only good or it is revoked by operation of law if the subject of the certificate is subsequently convicted or adjudicated delinquent for a new crime. Sub 11 puts into place some limitations. Let's see, what else? Section 4, the new language in Section 4 basically says that if the person has, I think it's a restatement of the earlier eligibility requirement, that if the person has filed a petition for an expungement or a certificate of good conduct in the past 2 years, that person may not be eligible for filing of a petition for a certificate of good conduct. And I think the rest of it is conforming. In the same section where we require by law the notice of an expungement, we put in the same requirement for a notification process for the certificate of good conduct. And then there is some appropriations language. I understand that when this bill was in Senator Higgins's budget last biennium, or was it last session, I think the fee was helpful in terms of the fiscal note. And we do ask for a filing fee in this in the bill. That's the gist of the bill, and I don't have anybody here to testify for the bill. This is one of those things where it's kind of scary when it's actually, you know, your own idea and you're bringing it forward, and so it's all on my shoulders, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Moab. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak for or against this bill? You can come forward and identify yourself.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. Mark Hazy with the Council on Crime and Justice.
Mr. Hazy.
I just wanted to make one quick comment. Currently in Minnesota, this was mentioned earlier, there really is no remedy for somebody who is convicted of a crime to after, you know, they've moved well beyond it, done everything they should have done, maybe 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And partly this is because of recent Minnesota case law that has made it impossible, well, possibly impossible for somebody to get a conviction expunged. And there's really, you know, so I think there's two ways that are being looked at dealing with this. One is Senator Moab's Certificate of Rehabilitation bill. Another is Senator Ortman's expungement bill that includes convictions. And I just, whatever comes out of these bills, out of this session, this is something that really needs to be looked at hard and something done. And I hope that, I really want to applaud the efforts that have been put here today to do something about this. And I hope that, you know, whatever route ends up being used, that we can make it possible for Minnesotans to finally, you know, put their past behind them when it's appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hazy. Is there anyone else in the audience that would wish to make comment on this bill? Committee's open for discussion. Any questions? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Senator Moi, thank you for bringing this forward. I worked a lot on this concept, and I'm glad that you're tackling it this year. It is something I think that is really needed. In Minnesota, other states have used this concept successfully, and I'm really glad that you're tackling it this year.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moab.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I don't think you weren't here earlier, but I acknowledge on the record the awesome work that you did on this bill the last time around. And I also passed out the information, Senator Scheid, I named you to in my opening remarks, about our Northern Borders tour and the information and what we learned from the Canadian government about their own process to allow Minnesotans and other U.S. citizens to rehabilitate their good record. And I actually have a copy of that application floating around. And Senator Higgins had put this bill substantially together. I just got the application for the rehabilitation process from the Canadian government like 2 weeks ago, and it is eerily similar in the elements that they require for their process. It's very similar to the things that the elements that we require in the Certificate of Good Conduct. So,
Senator Moab, if this is passed, will the Canadian government recognize the work that we will do here? Will that ease the passage of American citizens with a past to travel freely across their border?
I don't think that we could presume that a process that we've created here in the state would somehow be binding on the Canadian government. However, I would hope that if we could put something like this in place, it would perhaps open the door for a potential conversation with perhaps the Canadian government or the federal government to say, and this may be a first for as far as border states are concerned, the northern border states are concerned, for us to say, you know, we have this instrument in place. If we have a Minnesotan who's gone through this process, we're not asking you to do away with your process, but as part of the documentations that you require in your process, you know, we would like to allow our people to submit our certificate as part of that package, and will you, you know, maybe look upon that those applications more favorably, given how onerous and how detailed we've had these people go through in our own state, the same process to get this certificate. I mean, I certainly would like for us to be able to have that conversation. As you can see in the application, whether we do this or not, our people, if they were to avail themselves of this process offered by the Canadian government, they would have to almost do exactly all the detail work that we're requiring in this certificate and submit it as part of their application process.
For some reason, Senator Moore, I kind of sense that this is a federal thing. Apparently other states haven't attempted to make up their own relationship with the Canadian government.
And Mr. Chair, you are absolutely right, except that what we're finding is that states, particularly northern border states, have had to be creative about how we navigate our relationship with the federal and the provincial Canadian government, not only with respect to things like this, but with respect to other things like enhanced driver's licenses and passport cards. At the end of the day, it will have to be a federal conversation, but because the enhanced border issues affect our citizens, many states, not just Minnesota, have had to come up with solutions that they then have to back channel or work directly with the federal government to get some assistance and some relief for citizens. So I think that I guess from my perspective, we have to take the leadership to take care of our citizens. I don't think on matters like this, the federal government is necessarily that into the weeds about helping us to alleviate the concerns of our constituents.
Senator Ortman, did you have any questions?
Oh, no. Mr. Chairman.
You were confused, I think, Mr. Chair.
That happens often.
Mr. Chairman, and perhaps Senator Moore, did you talk about the issue, which I'm not sure the federal government would get involved in, and that is just the simple matter of DUIs on the record of someone. And the first we learned of it was our first stop in Duluth at the port. I don't know if you talked about people who have, some men who have worked on the lakes for their whole adult lifetime, and because they, some time ago, matters not how long ago, had a drunk driving offense, were no longer allowed to even be on the boat that docked in a Canadian port. So they were going to lose their livelihood. And so I'm not sure the federal government, that, you know, and they can apply to be rehabilitated through the Canadian consulate, but this, I think we might get some reciprocity someday if the standards are very similar. I think that's something to work for. Obviously, it doesn't happen automatically without conversation.
Right. And I am not in any way, Mr. Chair and members, the Canadian government, I mean, we have their documents, but I'm not in any way representing that in some way, you know, they have given permission or are participating in this conversation. It is just my hope. The other thing is that, you know, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, when you were talking about the horse workers, it was very familiar what we had heard about the truck drivers, that the U.S. truck drivers would get to the border, and when they do the background checks in the databases, many of them could only get their trucks to the border, and they couldn't cross into Canada. And so it has increasingly actually, we went on a northern border security tour, and it ended up being almost a commerce tour, actually, for Senator Scheid because of the commerce issues that were being affected by the enhanced border securities. I think it's really important. We are a northern border state. We share a very long border with Canada, and it's very important for us to pay attention to our border security issues. That being said, I think that we could also, you know, think about other ways that we can help our citizens to navigate that. And I'm not saying that this is the solution, but it certainly could create an opportunity for some conversation. So,
Senator Mwah, your bill does not have an expungement element to it. So the record is still there. It's just that this is kind of a formal recognition that the individual has actually had a good conduct in our state.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
We're attesting to that.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Anyone from the audience that wishes to speak for or against the bill? Senator Mwah moves that Senate File Number 1097. There were no amendments. Be recommended to pass. Any further stops, Senator Mwah?
Committee on Finance.
And go to Committee on Finance. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Bill passes.
Let's take Senator Ortman's bill.
Senator Ortman, you're on deck.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for hearing Senate File 1231 this evening. Senate File 1231 is an expungement bill as opposed to the certificate of good conduct that you heard Senator Mwah testify about earlier. This bill would be an expungement, which is not the destruction of records. It involves the sealing of records and the development of a process in our courts by which courts could determine whether an offender with a conviction on the record has sufficiently rehabilitated themselves and are no longer a threat to public safety such that they should be able to have what I would call a second chance or forgiveness. And you'll see in your packet that a couple of years ago I authored an article about that, about the concept of forgiveness as the logical extension of our law enforcement process, that when someone violates the law, we do want to enforce the law. We do want to punish them. We do want to sentence them. But in some cases, residents of Minnesota, despite the fact that they may have committed a crime, have earned the right to forgiveness or a second chance in our society, an opportunity to get a job, an opportunity to get an apartment, to start on a life of responsibility, to care for their children and to be responsible members of our society. And right now, I think our process is without some certificate of good conduct or expungement. I think we've marginalized an awful lot of residents in Minnesota. I don't think that it was intentional. I think that the advent of the internet and data privacy and the ability of folks to go on the internet and find all these records where they wouldn't previously have gone to the courthouse to find out what was happening, it's now so easily, so readily available. And now folks are making decisions on leasing, on employment issues based on conviction records. And in some cases that is so unfair, but it's also bad for our society when it would be so much better if we had productive residents that could support themselves, that could support their families and provide homes. So this effort on my part, I began in 2007. I'll tell you that when I passed the conditional release program in 2005, I was pretty excited about that. But that bill originally included an expungement portion of it, that if the folks that were incarcerated for drug crimes could rehabilitate themselves and go through chemical dependency and then successfully go through reentry programs and get through the intensive supervision, that they could then appeal to a court for expungement. And I found out at that point just what a disarray our current law is on the subject of expungement. We have a statute that authorizes expungement, but on the most restrictive of terms. It doesn't really apply. But we have courts that, in their inherent authority, issue expungements nonetheless because they think it's the right thing to do. Actually, Ramsey County courts issue expungements all the time. But take this one step further. One of the big, I think it's almost of a constitutional crisis. The courts may issue these orders, but the executive branch doesn't recognize them as authoritative, and so they don't expunge the records of the BCA. And so when I learned all about this subject, I thought, okay, well, let's start over. Let's have a clear authorization to the courts that would authorize them to issue these orders and a clear direction to the executive branch that they must recognize the court orders when they're issued. And so Senate File 1231 is the extension of that effort. In 2007, when I first introduced the bill, there was an onslaught of controversy. I could not believe how controversial this issue was. And I think it was the Pioneer Press and then some of the greater Minnesota newspapers all published commentaries against the fact that we would destroy records, which we never wanted to do, or we would seal them from public view without hearings. They assumed that we wanted to let, you know, sex offenders destroy their records. It got pretty crazy. In your packet, you'll see what the public response was, though. The public response to my office, we got hundreds of emails and letters saying that an expungement process in the court was the answer to their prayers. Folks have been denied jobs even though they graduated from college after being released from prison. And you'll see a representative sample of them in your packet. We had testimony 2 years ago on that bill, and it was very compelling testimony. Testimony from folks who had no idea when they pled guilty that that meant that they were going to have a record for the rest of their lives and couldn't qualify for some licensed position. They couldn't get a job without revealing that they'd been convicted and that they could not get an apartment. They had no idea. And so that's what I meant when I said that I think we've marginalized them because these records are all out there now. So I worked on this process. And I honestly took to heart so many comments from the county attorneys, from the chiefs and the sheriffs. And unfortunately, Senate File 1231 does not incorporate all of those amendments that members of this committee worked so hard on and the members of the Jobs Committee and other folks that really care about this bill. So what I'd like to do, Madam Chair, is to amend the bill with the A4 amendment, and then I'd like to explain what that does once we've amended it, if you wouldn't mind.
Senator Ortman moves the A4 amendment as an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape she would like it to be in. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Senator Ortman. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just very briefly go through the A4 so everyone understands what it is. The Section 1 would allow someone applying for a job to say that they do not have an arrest or a conviction if that arrest or a conviction has been expunged. Let's be clear. I mean, I think that if you're going to apply for a job and you have to admit that you have an arrest record or a conviction record, you're likely not to get that job if someone without a record has also applied. And I don't want people to be confused. I don't want them to wonder when they apply for a job, do I have to say it or not? So we should be clear that if you've been given an expungement, you are there's immunity for saying that, no, you've not been convicted of a crime. Section 2 is really the heart of the bill. It talks about the fact that this is not a destruction of records remedy. It is a sealing record and that the sealing of the record and that the executive branch, again, once a court order is present, the executive branch must expunge the records. And then following that, sets out the elements of a petition. So someone who might have been convicted of a crime prepares a petition after a certain length of time. Section 3 also includes the prohibition for sex offenders to apply. It prohibits anyone who's currently on probation or someone who has current charges pending cannot apply. They're not qualified to apply. Under Section 4 are the elements of the petition itself. Talking about what they must include, it includes why they want an expungement, they must explain what records they may have, criminal records they may have, whether they've been involved in orders for protection against the victims in the case. We want to know what is continuing here and what efforts they've made towards personal rehabilitation and their criminal conviction record, not just in Minnesota, but everywhere across the country in every single jurisdiction or in a foreign country, including federal court orders. Moving on to Subdivision 3, the petitioner, the person who wants to expunge their record, also has the burden of serving the papers to the prosecutor and to all of the local and state agencies that might be affected. And then that prosecutor will notice the victims so that the victims are aware that there is a hearing, that this perpetrator or convict has actually applied for an expungement, and then that victim has a right to submit comments at a hearing, either orally or in person. Subdivision 4 talks about that hearing. Subdivision 5 talks about the court's obligation to maintain records. Subdivision 6 is a provision that says that regardless of an expungement, if you've been convicted of a crime of violence, you still can't carry a gun. That's part of the order of the expungement. You cannot carry a gun. Subdivision 7 talks about restoring the person to their status as to prior to the conviction. There's a provision that if somebody obtains an expungement and then testifies that they do not have a criminal record, they can't be convicted of perjury if they say they've not been convicted for that particular record. Going on, if someone has an expungement but then they commit a crime, all previous conviction records would then become open and public again, and they would be available for sentence enhancement on the part of our courts and the prosecutors. An expungement never interferes with the maintenance of DNA samples or DNA records. They're never sealed. Under Subdivision 8, we have the limitations of an order. Right now, this provision talks about orders or expunged records being available to law enforcement by court order. Honestly, I think that's probably one of the areas where, with the county attorney's recommendations, I'll probably make a significant change on that, but just so you know, there's a court order aspect of that. Subdivision 10 talks about it being appealable. And Subdivision 11 is probably one of the most important provisions. It talks about the factors that must be considered by the court before entering an expungement order. And it says that the court has a mandate. Now, it shall consider and issue a written finding, and it must consider the nature and severity of the crime, the danger to any individuals or society, the length of time since the crime occurred, the steps taken towards rehabilitation, all the extenuating or mitigating factors, the reasons for the expungement, the actual criminal record. So there's a whole list of things that the court must consider. And then if you get to Subdivision 11B, the bill talks about what the standard is for the court. If the court determines by a preponderance of the evidence that the benefit to the petitioner outweighs the disadvantages to the public and public safety, after considering the factors, then the court may, in its discretion, grant an expungement. So the court must consider certain factors and then weigh those factors against the public's interest to keep public records or to protect public safety. And only once the court has satisfactorily balanced all those interests is the court allowed to, in its discretion, to grant the expungement. So what we're doing is asking the court to look at these folks on a case-by-case basis with a petition and determine in its discretion whether or not this person can be trusted with an expungement. The next section talks about when an expunged record may not be expunged, and that's when the agency or jurisdiction who holds the records, like the BCA, establishes clear and convincing evidence that the interests of the public and public safety outweigh the interests of the petitioner. So they have the right to come back in and prove that while the court might be willing to do this, it's still in the interest of public safety a big risk. So that is the A4 amendment, Madam Chair. essentially.
Senator Ormond, so now the bill as amended, is this the bill that left the Judiciary Committee the last time when we sent this off out of our committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. I think there was one more change that I'm trying to dig through the history records and find it. I think it was made in the Jobs Committee. I think there was a good one made in the Jobs Committee. So we're going to try and reconstruct what that was and put it back in. We had some difficulties reconstructing what happened that year. I'm not really sure why, but the reviser's office was having some difficulty with this. But, yes, I believe that the A4 puts this bill back in the same form in which it left the committee a couple of years ago.
Well, we, Senator Ormond, we did some good work on this bill.
We did some excellent work, Madam Chair, and I guess if I had one, I know that there may be folks here to testify, but one closing comment about this bill is that it seems like forever is a long time to be unforgiving. That's essentially what we've done. We have said forever. You'll never get a chance to participate in society again, and this creates the process by which we can correct that if someone has earned the right to do that.
Well, Senator Ormond, certainly I think the package of bills we've heard tonight is compelling. I mean, as we were walking through the elements of your bill, I was thinking that we wouldn't need Senator Latt's bill, or we wouldn't need the notification bills, maybe my private employer, liability bills. I mean, some of those elements, definitely surface in what you've provided here, and I think it's a good bill. It's a good bill. Questions for Senator Ormond? Anybody in the audience who would like to testify on the bill, please come up to the table.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Kelly Keegan. I am a private criminal defense attorney. I practice all over the state. And I frequently handle expungement cases. In fact, I handled three this morning. And so I can give a very real picture to what's going on. Senator Ormond's correct when she says that the expungement laws right now are in complete disarray. There's a really big problem that this bill fixes. And essentially, as she alluded to, there's two types of expungements in the state of Minnesota. There's expungements under statutory authority, where that gives the judges permission to go ahead and grant expungements. They can grant expungements for judicial branch records as well as executive branch records. And then there are the expungements that are under the court's inherent authority. Now, over the past year, there were two cases that have come out of the Minnesota appellate courts. And they both had to do with the question of, does the separation of powers doctrine prevent judges from being able to order executive branch records to be sealed? And these two cases say completely opposite things, which is where the confusion comes from. In one of them, the Supreme Court held that a judge did not abuse his discretion by ordering only judicial branch records to be sealed. In that case, the defendant appealed and said, if you're going to just only order judicial branch records sealed, then what's the point of the expungement if half the records are still out there? Now, the court in that case did say that a judge could have the authority to order the executive branch records sealed if it was upholding a constitutional right or if there had been some sort of constitutional right violation on the part of the defendant, or if it was to uphold a judicial function. But employability was specifically not a judicial function. So if someone has problems with employability based on their criminal record, that is not to uphold a judicial function. Now, the other case, State versus VAJ, held, it was in the Court of Appeals. And this case said a judge did not abuse discretion by ordering all the records to be sealed in both the executive branch and the judicial branch. So now we have two cases that say completely opposite things. And to make matters even more confusing, the state Supreme Court declined to review the second case, State versus VHA, which basically left both of them as good law. Now, all the people that I work with, judges, attorneys, prosecutors, everyone was kind of scratching their head saying, why didn't the Supreme Court just review VHA and at least make some kind of clear decision? Because what's happened now is you have some judges who want to follow the first case and say, I don't think I have the authority to go ahead and seal up executive branch records. Other judges say, I'm going to follow the second case, and I think I do have the authority. And the reason why this is really important is that the executive branch houses records that are often of the most concern in an expungement case. It's records such as the Department of Health records, Department of Human Services, You know, that they use to disqualify service providers from providing, you know, direct contact with patients or whatnot. Department of Education for licensing teachers. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension for people who, you know, that's where people's criminal backgrounds are kept. And so it's become a real problem. And to me, in my practice, it's difficult because I can oftentimes talk to people. You know, someone will call me up and say, I want to get this expunged. And I ask them, well, what's the problem that you're having? Well, I can't get a license. Okay. I can go through their case with them, and they may have the most sympathetic case ever, where it's clear that a judge would grant an expungement for them. But I'm in the position of explaining to them that we may get to court. You may pay the filing fee. You may pay me to go there and fight for it in court. You may convince the judge that it's the right thing to do and to go ahead and grant it. But in the end, the judge may say, you know what, I really want to help you, but I think I can only order half of the records to be sealed. And in the case, the VIJ case, the court, the logic that they used was to only seal up half the records is a meaningless remedy. It doesn't do anything for anyone. And so I have to oftentimes explain that at the end of this big, long road with somebody, we still may not even achieve what we're trying to achieve. And so people are faced with this decision of saying, well, do I want to spend the time and the money when I don't know if it's even going to happen? And so there's, I think everyone that's in the court system agrees, whether or not they take the first case position or the second case position, everyone agrees that something needs to be done to fix this. Because right now courts are just kind of doing whatever they feel, and it's, we don't have any uniformity. And so Senator Ortman's bill creates this uniformity and basically says, let's just give statutory authority. Let's stop with the two different types of expungements. Judges still have discretion to whether or not they want to go ahead and grant the expungement. They still have discretion under this bill to say, I don't want certain branch departments departments to seal their records. They have that authority and that discretion under this bill. And so I would ask that you take a good look at this to kind of spare all of us from the head scratching that's been going on in the court system, and that something needs to be done. And everyone who deals with this agrees that something needs to be done. And so with that, I'll leave it to any questions if anyone has any questions.
Ms. Keegan, does Senator Ortman's bill raise a different set of questions, which is, does this trigger constitutionality issues that the legislature is trying to tell the court what they need to do? I mean, that I think that's sort of the other side, asking the question from the other side. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Madam Chair, members, I think in practice what would happen is that if the legislature went ahead and said, okay, you're going to have statutory authority judges to go ahead and grant expungements, I don't think that the state would appeal the different departments. Right now, the different departments, the Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, take the position that if a judge orders them to go ahead and seal their records, they will do it. They may not agree that a judge has the authority to do that, but if a judge goes ahead and does it, typically, they will go ahead and seal those records. And I think that if there were statutory authority, you'd see a lot of the different state departments, prosecutors, everyone saying, you know what, this is our fix. I think everyone is more interested in a fix, quite frankly. And to give the statutory authority, I think, would be sort of enough to let the issue rest, quite frankly.
Does
that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the witness? Very good. Well, thank you for giving us your input. Anyone else would like to testify, either for or against this bill? Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe there's support on this committee to pass this bill this evening, but because the amendment had so many significant changes, that I'm going to ask that the committee put the bill on the table, and hopefully we can take it back up. There was some really important testimony from a county attorney, Carruthers, and from the county attorneys as a group. When I first started this, they were absolutely opposed to absolutely every element of my bill. And they've informed me along the way, but I think they've educated themselves as well. And I think that there are some recommendations that they've made that we can incorporate in this bill and improve this bill even more. And so with that, I would ask that the committee lay this bill on the table.
Well, we will do that. And Senator Ortman, thank you for bringing the bill to us. And for those advocates and people who know that the workload of the committee today, we want to act on this bill. So I would encourage all of you to work with Senator Ortman to put this bill into the shape, because I think the committee is anxious to act on this bill and get it on its way. Thank you, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
There's nobody left.
Senator Moi, whenever you're ready, go right ahead and start.
Madam Chair and members, the last bill on the agenda tonight is Senate File 560. It is an expungement reform bill along with the same line that of work that we're doing today. I have Ms. Lindsay Davis, who is the staff attorney from Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services, here to testify and to help me answer questions on the bill. So let me very briefly walk through the bill with all of you, and then we will take testimony and answer some questions. Senate File 560, this is a brief summary of the substantive sections of the bill. So Section 1 and 2 of the bill make only final adjudications of felony level offenses for 16 and 17-year-olds public record. Under current law, charges are for felony level offenses for 16 and 17-year-olds are public record, and we want to change that to make sure that it is only final adjudications. Section 3 of the bill allows a judge at sentencing to modify or suspend a collateral sanction described in Chapter 609B upon successful completion of sentence. Section 4 adds all juvenile records to the expungement statute. Section 5 adds all types of cases ultimately dismissed to the expungement statutes. Section 6 allows dismissed cases to be expunged by motion at the time of dismissal. Section 8 allows prosecutor to request a hearing upon the demand of a victim. Section 9 removes expungement hearing requirements for low-level drug offenses or for dismissals unless it is requested by the prosecutor. Section 10 places the burden of proof for not sealing juvenile records upon the record holder. And Section 12 allows subjects of expunged records to access their sealed record without a court order and with proof of identification. And Madam Chair and members, Senate File 560 is really a compilation of a number of different groups, including people who work with children and youth in juvenile justice, all the way to people who work Judge Alexander and the Council on Crime and Justice. A number of different organizations came together to help put this bill together, and I am hopeful that we will be able to answer some questions, but I'd like to have Ms. Davis answer, testify and then answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Davis.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I work at Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services, and every year hundreds of Minnesotans call us for help due to a criminal record, not necessarily like conviction. And we help low-income individuals who have fallen through the cracks, essentially. And what this bill does and why it's important is it helps individuals who have essentially fallen through the cracks. It helps juvenile offenders who are trying to rehabilitate themselves and move on and become productive members of society. And it also helps individuals who were never actually found guilty or pled guilty. And so focusing on the juvenile offenders first, I have the opportunity to work at the Juvenile Detention Center for a number of years with juvenile offenders. And I ask almost all of them, what do you think people will know about your juvenile record? And they all tell me, it goes away when I turn 18. And in fact, that's not true. Most of the juveniles that I worked with do have a public criminal record. There's a huge misunderstanding in our community that juvenile records are somehow private when, in fact, they're not normally.
As an attorney, I've had many clients who have juvenile records, sometimes records that didn't even result in a guilty plea or adjudication of delinquency. And the children grow up or graduate from high school or college only to find that their juvenile record has prevented them from completing the degree program that they've entered or finding just basic employment or housing to meet the basic needs for themselves and their children. When we go to court and try to get a juvenile record sealed, we're faced with real problems because there is no clear guidance in the law about how to do it or what standards to be used or which records could actually be sealed. So first of all, this bill is important because it provides a remedy for our youth who have rehabilitated themselves and want to move on and contribute to our society and care for themselves without relying on public assistance. The second group of people that this bill helps are individuals who are adults when an offense occurred, but they were never convicted and never found guilty. Again, in my experience as an attorney working with people with criminal records, I found that there are inadequate remedies for those who have dismissed charges on their records. One type of individuals I see are defendants who were told that they would not have a criminal record. Either they got to court and the case was kicked out, or they were arrested and never charged, or they were victims of identity theft. These individuals could be perfectly eligible for an expungement under our current Minnesota law. However, by the time they realize that they actually have a record, most of the damage has been done. They've been denied housing opportunities, employment opportunities, and they face a 6 to 9 month wait for a district court hearing for their expungement. And oftentimes, they have little guidance about how to actually fill out the paperwork correctly. The second group of adults we see that this bill would help are individuals who we all would think, A, do not have a criminal record, but in fact they do, and B, we would think they would fall under our current expungement law because the case was resolved in their favor, but in fact they are not eligible for an expungement. Just an example of some of our clients. We've had clients who've completed diversion programs, which were intended to cut court costs and keep individuals out of the criminal justice system. Because some counties' diversion programs are structured so that an individual must admit that they did something wrong, they're not eligible for an expungement under our current law, and they're treated as if they have a conviction. We also have clients who were given a deal called vacate and dismiss, where there was a guilty plea initially, but it was dismissed so that the individual would not have a record. Those individuals are not eligible for an expungement under our current law and are treated as if they have a conviction. Finally, individuals who received a stay of adjudication where the guilty plea was withheld, even though the court, the prosecutor, and the defendant all intended not to have a record, they're also treated as if they have a criminal conviction for expungement purposes, and they have a criminal record. So again, juvenile offenders and individuals who were not convicted, have no notice at any time during the court proceedings that they actually will have a criminal record, and B, when they find out that they do, they find that there are real incomplete remedies. So I would ask that you take the opportunity today, members of the committee, to support this bill and help those individuals who are young offenders trying to rehabilitate themselves or those who have simply not been notified that they have a criminal record.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Madam Chair, I believe that there's a small amendment to shape up the bill. And Mr. Backus, I don't have a copy of the amendment, but...
Madam Chair, members, it's the A1 amendment. It should be in your packets.
It is.
And there's a technical amendment to that, if I could read that.
Would you please?
On line 1.3 of the amendment, after the comma, after line after 33, insert before subdivision, insert 609A.02, comma. It's just to clarify what the cross-reference is to. It's actually to another section subdivision, and we left that out initially of the bill.
For 609 what?
609A.02, comma.
0.02, comma. All right. With that addition to the A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment as an author's amendment.
Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted.
Madam Chair, members, you know, earlier when I was talking about the Canadian process, if you will look at the paperwork that I passed out, they have a long provision about juveniles and juvenile expungement in the instructions. I think it's around here somewhere, and I'll make sure that you all get a copy of it afterwards because it's just It is not even adults. I mean, it's juveniles and juvenile adjudications. And if you recall the conversation that we had about, you know, Senator Scogin's bill about lowering the age, it basically said that if you're a juvenile in Minnesota and you were adjudicated as an adult, you will be found inadmissible into Canada based on whatever that crime is if it violates a federal crime in Canada. I mean, Senator Orman, I'm looking at you, and I just feel like I think when you first introduced your expungement bill, and I think I carried a version of that bill in the previous year, it was kind of like cutting edge. It was really risky and out there. But I think the longer we've been around here and the more we hear about the different ways that people's lives are collaterally affected by their criminal background, I just feel like it is not only timely, but it is absolutely appropriate and good public policy to be moving in this direction.
Are there any questions? Is there anybody in the audience who'd like to testify either for or against this bill?
And I'm aware that he is going to comment on the bill. So,
thanks, Senator.
It's me. I'm Sharon.
I was looking around.
Not entirely obvious. Start with your name, please.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Todd Liljenquist, and I'm with the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. And let me first start by saying we are opposing portions of the bill. We do not oppose any of the provisions related to the juvenile records. That's not the issues that we're concerned about. Our opposition is related to Section 6 and a portion of Section 10. We believe there should be a presumption for the free flow of information, and we have serious concerns about Section 6 and a portion of Section 10 because they tend to reduce the requirements for expunging a record. As to Section 6, current expungement law provides that there are significant procedural requirements that must be met in order for an expungement to be granted. For example, the petition for expungement must state why the expungement should be granted. It should state the petitioner's criminal conviction record, the petitioner's criminal charges record, and all prior requests for this offense and any other offense for pardon, expungement, or sealing. Section 6 of the bill would remove such requirements when a motion for expungement is made when the charges are dismissed, a motion at the hearing. In fact, no petition needs to be filed at all under Section 6 of the bill, so that no disclosure of criminal conviction record or criminal charges record or prior request for expungement or sealing needs to be submitted. We currently have good procedural requirements in place under that section, and in our view, expungements are important enough to require judges to be given all the pertinent information when they're making a decision on that, on the expungement. As to Section 10, our opposition is limited to Subdivision B and the addition of 609A02 Subdivision 1. And that statutory section relates to certain controlled substances offenses. Section 10 would shift the burden of proof for expungement from the petitioner to the prosecutor for those types of controlled substances offenses. We have concerns about making it easier to expunge information that we would deem relevant to the tenant screening process. The tenant screening process is vitally important to landlords. When landlords screen tenants, they are attempting to minimize risk not only for themselves but also for other residents. Criminal history information is an important component of that process, and there may be instances where non-conviction information is entirely relevant to those types of decisions. If someone has been arrested and or charged several times for the same type of activity, that would seem to be extremely relevant as to whether the applicant should be accepted. Landlords are in a position in many communities where they may literally lose their rental license and their ability to rent out housing based on certain tenant activity and or guests of tenant and their tenants and their activity. There are certain procedures in place before that would take place, ultimately they could lose their license. Many communities also have programs where law enforcement works closely with landlords, and as part of those programs where our members are consistently told that it is imperative that landlords screen properly. We believe that Section 6 and a portion of Section 10 would significantly reduce the procedural requirements for obtaining an expungement, thereby making relevant tenant screening information less readily available.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lilienquist, I surmising or deducing from what you're saying that a landlord would therefore not rent to somebody if they knew that at some time in the past there had been an arrest for a drug charge or whatever the charge is. I mean, isn't that kind of the bottom line here?
Madam Chair, Senator Scheid, I cannot speak for all landlords, of course, but our members believe that a full picture of the applicant is vitally important to them making decisions. I am not aware, I'm not personally aware of any of our members refusing to rent to someone or not accepting someone as a tenant based on one arrest or one charge being filed against them. I'm not aware of that. What we are concerned about is when there are multiple arrests or multiple charges being filed on an individual for certain types of behavior continually. So if someone has three arrests for drug charges, now if they ultimately don't lead to a conviction or anything beyond that, yes, absolutely, the criminal justice system has spoke. But at some point that becomes entirely relevant to whether or not future behavior is indicative from those three arrests.
Madam Chair,
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, if I might ask Senator Moy, isn't the idea that the current conduct and therefore the future to be predicted by the court here would, if they granted an expungement, would be that the person would had cleaned up their act or set their life on a new course? I mean, isn't that the point here?
Madam Chair and Senator Scheid, that's the whole point of putting them through the process. As Senator Ortman testified before in her expungement bill, the intent here is so that people can say, I don't have that record, but that the process for them getting to that point to be able to say that is to have the court being able to say, we have looked at, we found your petition to be worthy, we're expunging the record so that you can move forward to say you don't have that criminal background.
Madam Chair.
These are juveniles, yes.
Yes.
So these are juveniles, so
yeah.
In any case in your bill.
Yes.
Mr. Lilienquist, did I misunderstand you when you said you have landlords that require a picture of everybody who's applying for
no.
apartment?
He meant...
Madam Chair... No.
Oh, like the big picture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that what you meant?
I meant the full picture.
Okay.
Picture of the... No.
We do not pull...
No, no, Madam Chair. And if I may, my understanding of Section 6 is that it does not just apply to juveniles. That Section 6, in my interpretation, applies broadly to... All applicants who would be petitioning for an expungement at that time. And our concern with that section is that the procedural requirements, no petition has to be filed on Section 6. So in other words, the court would not be looking at any information submitted by the petitioner. So if someone had any criminal history in the past, that information would not be available to the judicial officer making the decision at that time. And that's our concern.
Madam Chair, could I comment on that section?
Mr. Hussey.
Thank you. The reasoning behind this Section 6 was really for a unique type of case, and we had somebody who was going to had been scheduled to testify tonight to talk about his case, but he couldn't stay this late. And just real briefly, this gentleman's case is that he had a previous record from like 2002, and then he started a family, was living in Minneapolis. He got pulled out on a picture lineup in St. Cloud on a rape case and hauled up to St. Cloud, held in jail for 45 days. The DNA came back, and he was not, what better evidence is there than DNA, and he was not the person. Well, he had to come back to the cities, find somebody to help him with an expungement petition, schedule a hearing 2 months in advance, serve all the parties, drive to St. Cloud. He got his hearing. He hadn't served somebody properly because there's issues with if you make, you know, too much for legal aid but not enough for an attorney, you have to do this on your own. So he had to reschedule a hearing, come back to the cities, go back to St. Cloud until he finally got his expungement for this dismissed horrendous case. And that's what this is really intended for, that sort of unique case where everybody in the courtroom sort of goes, why is this person here? Why should they have to come back to get an expungement? And also, to respond to Mr. Lilliquist's, you know, objection about not knowing enough about the person there, actually, everybody in that room has all the best information about that particular case. And at one point in the drafting, we talked about having a piece in here where the prosecutor would have to agree. You know, I don't know how Senator Ma feels about that, but I would not object to that, because really the intent here was for why is this person here? Why should they have to figure out this expungement process after they've been turned down for a job or employment? So thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, just to clarify, the Section 6 only applies to offenders in the preceding section where the criminal proceedings have been resolved in their favor. So it would be that subset of people.
Okay, well, I see it. Right. Any other, Senator Ortman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just in response, Mr. Liljenquist, to your comment about the past conduct being a predictor, that's exactly what I think we should be addressing. Because these folks don't have convictions. We're talking about non-convictions. And so the whole concept of presumed innocent means you can get through a whole lot of legal process and not get convicted, and that means that there's a non-conviction. It's a presumption of innocence. And so I don't want the landlord to hold an arrest record or a non-conviction against the applicant tenant based on an assumption of future behavior, because that keeps you from, or the landlord from leasing to somebody who shouldn't have a cloud over their head because they were not convicted of a crime. And it seems to me that the landlord, once the landlord leases to somebody like this, they can take action for bad behavior. They have all the rights at that point. And so there are all kinds of processes to follow if the person engages in bad conduct after the lease. But we're talking about the leasing decision and whether previous arrest records that don't lead to conviction are really indicative of future behavior. And I think maybe this is the policy point. I don't think they should be.
Any further discussion? Anybody else in the room who wants to give us their opinion on this bill? Come on up to the table, please.
Are you referring to this? Can you show me what that is?
Madam Chair and members, my name is Julie Letourneau-Lackner. I'm here.
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
Julie Letourneau-Lackner from the BCA. And I am just here to mention that this bill would have a fiscal impact at the BCA, specifically sections 3, 4, 5, 9, 10, and 12, because it expands the ability for individuals to petition to have an expungement and would expand the expungements, thereby increasing our workload.
And Madam Chair, I'm also very well aware of that. I also want to put into the record that in all these second chance bills that we've been working on, we're very aware that some of them will cost money. And I think that that's part of the calculation that we make, is that going forward. But this is a policy committee, and if it's a good public policy, we ought to move it and then take the financial consideration when it gets to the budget division. And so I really appreciate the BCA being here to put that on the record, and I recognize that. The other thing I also want to share with the members of the committee is that has been working on these second chance bills. You know, Mr. Lilliquist and the multi-housing people and the business community have been equal partners as we've been engaging in this work. We certainly don't want this to have an adverse consequence on anybody. I mean, we're trying to address collateral and adverse consequences in people's lives, and we want to make this work. And I think I've shown in the past a willingness to continue to work on the language to make sure that we are not creating any unintended consequences, and I intend to do that with Senate Files 560 as we move forward.
Madam Chair and Senator Moi, if it makes you feel any better, I think there's a big fiscal note for my expungement bill, too. And I've asked them to look again at the issue because the records department at BCA is expanding, and we have so many records that they're already managing. So we already have folks managing BCA records. For my bill, I think there's a significant note with the courts. And both the BCA and the courts have said that there might be significant costs because there might be a significant number of people who need this relief. And I just...
There we go.
Okay. So we'll have the debate right. in the Public Safety Finance Division where it belongs, and hopefully we'll find a way to pay for what is the right thing to do.
Right. So, Madam Chair, if there's no one else, I'd like to move Senate File 560... as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay. Any further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. We are adjourned.
Before midnight.
You were giving the chair.
Before midnight.
I think she had one more thing.
No, I'm sure she didn't.
Senator Moi is great at saying, but wait.
Yeah.
Our infomercial, but wait.
Pretty comfortable.
Feels okay though, you're okay with it?
Yeah.